I don't know about you, but I've oftentimes wondered, where do we draw the line in what we do in serving people? Do we ever draw the line in what we do? It wasn't too long ago that President Obama really caused a stir. He went to Saudi Arabia, and he bowed before the Saudi Arabian King Abdullah. That caused a great deal of controversy. Should he have done that? Should a president of the United States bow to anybody? Just that simple. If he's the president of the United States, there's nobody in political power greater than him. Anybody bowing should be to our president, we said. Here he bows before the Japanese Emperor Akihito. So it's been more than once that he's done that. And he's not the only one who's done that. I read that President Obama, or I heard on news that President Obama was the first man, first president, to ever bow to a foreign power. Well, I started looking that up. Here's President Bush bowing before the Chinese Emperor Wen Haibo. Now, he may not be bowed as low, but he's bowed. Here's President Nixon bowing before Chairman Mao, of Chinese origin, communist to the very core of his body. Some of you would remember that. And here's President Eisenhower. Yes, we had a President Eisenhower. That's when I was born. And he is bowing before French leader Charles de Gaulle. He is one of our guys on our side, but he's still bowing before him, and de Gaulle is not bowing back. So, you ask the question, can you go too far? Where do you draw the line? Or do you draw the line? Well, this is going too far, in my opinion. Now, there's the bobblehead back there and all that. The truth is, this never happened. This is somebody who wanted to kind of make fun of President Obama bowing before other kings. And so the question comes to mind, is there a place we draw the limit in what we do in humbling ourselves before other people? Is there a place we say that's just too far? John chapter 13 will help us, I think, in dealing with that. Let me ask you to turn there if you haven't already, and let's just read the first few verses as we get started in the study, verses 1 to 3. The same day Jesus went out of the house. Oh, wait, I'm in Matthew. That's not the right book. Okay. It didn't sound right when it started. It was just before the Passover, and Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God, and he was returning to God. First three verses basically tell us what Jesus knew about this occasion. Passover feast is about to take place. Jesus and his disciples are gathered together. And Jesus knew three things that are pointed out. First of all, the time had come. Three other times in the book of John, he's going to be prompted by his fellow disciples to do certain things, and his answer is going to be, the time hasn't come. But now the time has come. The time has come for him to fulfill the very mission that he came into the world to do. To go through terrible, terrible persecution and agony, the worst death ever known to man, for our sake. The time has come. He knows the time has come. And he's preparing himself to do what his mission was all about. He knew that Satan had entered into Judas's heart. It's amazing to me to think about Judas. Here's a man that has been with Jesus closely for 3 years. He's seen all the miracles. He's heard all the teachings. Just a few days before this, he would have seen Lazarus raised from the dead, a man who had been dead 4 days. And when Jesus was about to raise him from the dead, and he told him to remove the stone from the tomb and open the tomb, Martha, Lazarus' sister, said, "Oh, no, no, he's been in there 4 days. The odor will be too bad." And Jesus says, "Raise him up." He comes out covered in all of his burial clothes. Jesus says, "Unwrap him and set him free." Lazarus raised, and Judas sees it. But still Judas has let Satan come into his heart. And he has got to carry out what God has known forever that he would do. He'll betray Jesus. And Jesus will go through the cross in our behalf. And then Jesus knew his own identity. Powerful, important verse, I think, in verse 3. Jesus knew that he came from the Father. Jesus knew that he was going to the Father. Jesus knew that the Father had placed all power in his hands. There's something about that that I believe is important for us to realize in connection with our service. And how far will we go? How confident are we about who we are? Do we fear the bowing down before someone that would make them believe that we're inferior to them? Do we believe that we're just, you know, we don't want anybody to think that we're not better than they are, or at least equal to they? But Jesus knows who he is. He knows all power has been given to him. He came from the Father. He's going to the Father. And so as a result of that, he is going to say some things and do some things that are going to cause a tremendous change in the lives of people. He gives us an example of what humble love looks like. In verse 4, it simply says, "So he, Jesus, got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him." So, what Jesus did, he showed them the full extent of his love, going back to verse 1. That is translated in some of the translations, "He loved them to the end." Either one is a correct translation according to the Greek. I like this one better, but I can't prove that that's the one is the better of the two. But either way, Jesus is showing something by his act of love that is going to make a huge difference in the life of these disciples and makes a huge difference in our life as well. He's going to show his full extent of his love. Would the one who has all power in heaven and earth do something like this? Isn't there someone who ought to be doing it instead? So he gets up and he washes his disciples' feet. Interesting when you read about the setting. Either a curved setting, horseshoe kind of looking, or a way we might set it up, a table this way, table that way, table here, open here. Jesus is sitting at the second spot. That is the spot of honor. That is the spot of highest honor. The first spot, John is sitting there, the one closest to Jesus, apparently. The third spot, which is the second highest honor, after the third, Jesus, John, third spot, Judas Iscariot. I don't get it. If Jesus already knew this, I'd have him down at the end of the table. But at the end of the table was Peter. Closest to the water. Closest to the basin. And Jesus notices that nobody has washed feet. it's very custom in that day that when you went to someone's home, that you would have your feet washed, oftentimes by the servant or the slave of that people, of those people. If there isn't a servant or slave, the host or the hostess would oftentimes then take up that role and wash the feet of all these people who've been walking on those dusty roads, and they come in to sit down and eat, spreading their legs out long, and it's kind of smelly. It's not something you want to enjoy your meal by. And so they wash feet. And on this occasion, they sit there, and even though there's 12 of his disciples, the master is going to be the one who does the servant's work. You remember just a chapter or two before this, the mother of James and John came to Jesus and said, "Got a question I want to ask you. Can my two sons be on your right hand and on your left hand when you come into your kingdom? Can they? I'll let you be number one. I recognize that you're number one. But could my two boys be second and third?" Now, that's not anything unusual. Mother would ask that, wouldn't she? You'd want that for your kids. But the thing is, the rest of the disciples heard that, and they got pretty angry about it. And I don't think they got angry because they're saying, you know, nobody ought to be asking that. That's the Father's decision to make. I think they got angry because somebody asked it before they did. Because they were all wanting to be second and third in the kingdom. And so when they come together at this time where they're sitting around getting ready to eat, and there's the water, there's the basin, there's the towel, closest to Peter, they're not about to get up and wash each other's feet. No one at that table who is a disciple is going to get up and go around and by what he does say in any way that I am inferior to you, that you are greater than I am, that I am your servant. They're not going to do that. And so Jesus, the master, does the servant's work. He gets up and he washes the disciples' feet. And he washed all the feet. That may sound strange to you. But to me, it's a big thing. And I think it is to you too. There's 12 people around this table. Jesus knows everything about every one of them. And he washes Judas's feet. Judas is given the seat of honor. And Jesus comes and bows down and washes his feet. Is that going too far? So, you know, I've thought about this so much. Is that something I would have done? And I finally concluded, yes, I would, but I would have used a Brillo pad. I would have scraped that foot till it was clean. But you couldn't tell any difference in the way Jesus washed Judas's feet than anybody else. And also sitting at the table was Peter, closest to the foot washing utensils, but and going to be the one who would deny him three times, and Jesus would wash his feet. Is that going too far? Do we do that for people we know they're going to in some way deny us, betray us? And so Jesus gives them this example of humble love. And in the midst of that, he teaches them and us some very key things. First of all, well, I pushed twice, but we need a total body wash. He comes to Peter. And remember the story? Let's read it. Forgot that we didn't look at it a minute ago. Verse 6, he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Now, folks, quite honestly, that's a great statement from Peter. Peter is saying by that, you are greater than I am. You are greater and higher than I am. I should be washing your feet, if anything. You can't wash my feet. And Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. And then Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. I love that response. That to me is a beautiful response. Jesus is saying, if I don't wash you, you and I just have no relationship at all. And he's just talking about, at the moment, Peter's just thinking washing feet. And Peter says, well, if I have to let you wash me to have a relationship, give me a bath. Just give me a bath. I want that relationship with you. I think that is something Peter has been criticized for that he ought to be applauded for. That's how badly he's willing to let Jesus do whatever it takes for him to have this relationship. And so Jesus comes washing feet. And he gives us a lesson in this. When he talks about the fact, he said, you know, when Peter said, don't wash my feet, you know, Jesus said, every one of you here are clean but one, speaking of Judas. So Peter, no one here needs a bath except Judas. No one here needs a bath. You don't need a bath. You just need a foot washing. When we give our lives to Jesus, we get a clean, total, fully cleansed soul, body, spirit, heart, you name it. We are totally cleansed. We give our life to Jesus and there is nothing that is left dirty. And then we begin to live our life for Jesus, and on some occasions, maybe even daily, when you think about what we think and what we say and all the things, we don't quite live up to what we really want to be. And so we need more cleansing. And Jesus has just promised, look, I'll keep my blood cleansing you. I'll give you a foot washing every day. You can be clean before me all the time. Beautiful statement about how Jesus is saving us and what he does for us. And how that applies to us, he makes it very clear. Jesus asked the question, well, let's read verse 12 to 17. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place, verse 12. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, fill in the blank. Do you understand what I did? Is this clear to you? Do you get it? I am your teacher and Lord, your master, and I washed your feet. So you should wash. And if I didn't have the Bible in front of me and I hadn't read it, my response would be, if I were asked, what did Jesus say? I would say, you should wash my feet. I slapped you on the back, you should slap me on the back. That's not what Jesus said. I washed your feet. You should wash one another's feet. If I, your master and Lord, are willing to humble myself to the role of a servant and wash your feet, one of you should have gotten up and washed everybody's feet today. Back in the Revolutionary War, there's a patrol of people who are repairing a defense hole. They're working themselves to death, with one person hollering at them, telling them what to do. A man comes up on a horse in civilian clothes, and he hears the hollering, he sees the hard work that they're doing. He goes up to the man, he says, why are you not helping them? And the man replied by saying, sir, I am a corporal. He said, okay, I didn't know. So he got down off his horse, he got into the hole, He worked with them until they got it all finished. He got up. He came back to the corporal and he said to him, "Sir, the next time you get into a job that is really difficult and you need more people to help you, call your commander in chief and I will come back and help you again." That was George Washington. George Washington would do that kind of work. I mean, he's the commander in chief. He's not supposed to get himself dirty, is he? Not supposed to get down the hole with people, does he? Do you understand what I just did, Jesus said? Do you get it? I have given you an example. I want you to get this. This is an example for you and for me. This is an example. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Notice the rest of the reading. I stop short. You call me teacher and Lord, verse 13, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. He didn't say you will be blessed if you go around discussing them. He didn't say you'll be blessed if you even just have your growth group about it. He said you'll be blessed if you do it. If you do it. It's easier for me to talk about it. It's easier for me to preach about it. I have found in ministry that oftentimes, and more often than not probably, a demonstration of truth is more important than the declaration of truth. Lorne Sanney was the president of the Navigators for 30 years, with them for 50 years. The Navigators is a parachurch organization whose mission was to know him and to grow in him. They chose the word navigators because their mission was to go help people, disciples, learn how to navigate their life. So for 50 years, he was with them, and 30 years as their leader. In that 30 years, he preached at his home church 64 times. And then one day as he was leaving, he saw on the side of the road a group of widows who had been at church, and they had a flat tire. And he pulled over, and he got out to help them. And he admits he is not very mechanical. He and I would have it, you know, together. I would give it my best shot as he did. He got out. He started working on that tire. He got black all over his white shirt. He sweated like a dog. He broke his glasses. But he finally got that tire changed. After that, when he was talking with people and they would ask him things, he said that he got more compliments and comments about that one demonstration of faith than he ever did the 64 sermons all put together. Sometimes demonstration is more important than declaration. Or let's just say it this way. Declaration comes a whole lot easier if you've demonstrated it first. If people have seen you do these things, then maybe they're more open to hearing you talk about these things. And quite honestly, we understand why that would be the case. So what is being humble? Well, one thing it is not. It's not thinking badly about ourselves. We are the children of God. We sit right now with Jesus Christ in the heavenly places. We studied that in Ephesians. We're about as high as you can get on this earth. So we don't do it thinking, well, I'm just so bad, and, you know, I guess I'll do something, show how bad I am. And we certainly don't do it thinking of ourselves above others. And I'm going to prove I'm above everybody else, because here's something I'm going to do that nobody else would do. I don't think that's what's in our minds either. It is knowing whose we are, and it is treating others as at least equals or better. I should have taken the word equal out, I guess. Because I think everything in Scripture says we count others better than ourselves, doesn't it? Wendy's is a multi-billion dollar chain of restaurants. And we're all familiar with Dave Thomas, the founder of that chain, multi-billion dollar owner. And one time people would come up and ask him, what is it that caused you to be so successful in your business? His answer was, my MBA. Now, Dave Thomas didn't graduate from high school. So when he was talking about MBA, he wasn't talking about some graduate school work. MBA for him was my mop and bucket attitude. When Dave Thomas was at one of the stores, he was sweeping and cleaning and mopping just like one of the servants. Dave Thomas could have said, hey guys, I own every one of these things. Wash this floor. But Dave Thomas said, I'll wash the floor. There's something in that example that says he knew something about Jesus. He knew something about what made Jesus very, very pleased. So are we to wash feet? Well, there's some churches that have a regular occasion of washing feet. And I wouldn't mind doing that. But it's not a cultural need of ours. We don't come into this church building or this center where we worship. We don't come in here with dirty feet. I took a bath this morning. I washed everything. So I don't need my feet washed. But if you want to wash them, that's fine. I'll be glad to wash yours. But there's other needs that we do see on a regular basis. There's all types of humble and self-denying service needs that are out there for us. And we get to choose whether or not we will serve those or we'll just let them go. Maybe it is a car with a flat tire on the side of the road. Maybe they'd rather have somebody but me, but I should stop and at least give it my best effort. Maybe it's people with AIDS. Maybe it's children without parents. Maybe it's widows. Maybe it's people without a job. Just keep the maybes going. We could go all day, couldn't we? With people who could use our service. And where do we draw the line? I go up sometimes to a person on the side of the road who wants money, and my thought is, am I enabling bad behavior or not? And quite honestly, you're not doing anybody a service if you're enabling bad behavior. But it's a questionable thing. What do I do? Can I at least say, get in the car and we'll go eat? What do we do? Where do I draw a line? Or do I draw a line? I think as the people of God, we take on the attitude of Jesus and we basically say there is no task too menial for us. There is no service that is too great for us. And there is no one too lowly for us. When we started this church, one of the things that was very big on my mind was the fact that we would do things as we continue to do them. We will open up the opportunity for child care, for cleanup, for every one of those menial service things to everybody. And that's why we do it in the groups. And we give everybody that opportunity. I really had grown weary of seeing just a huge church, where only after a meal, only a few people would hang around to clean up. And I just thought, surely God's people are not so high and holy that they think that's something somebody else can do. So we have those kind of opportunities just in the way we try to go about being the church of God. Jesus gave us an example of humble love. And I'm hoping that this week we teach by what we do and say. I'm not trying to say that we ought not never say, but I am trying to say that that person is going to open up their minds and listen a whole lot better if in some way we've demonstrated what it means to be a humble servant and to have humble love for people who are lowly, for people that think they're better than us, whatever it is, that we would be willing this week to start doing that. Let's look for opportunities to serve the lowly. I'm challenging myself and you not to just go through the week, but to be on guard and to look, to search for an opportunity to serve the lowly, to get down and wash their feet. It may be something that is already arranged in Hope Works or Agape or somewhere like that. It may be something that we see as we drive by. It could be a neighbor. It could be anything. But I challenge us all. Let's be like Jesus. Let's wash some feet this week. Let's humbly serve without any desire for recognition. I don't know. I thought about maybe next week we get up and we tell what Jesus opened the door for us, you know, and how we were able to serve. But then I thought, well, that's got a good thing, and then there would be the recognition thing. I don't know. We'll leave that up to later. And if asked why, did you stop and do this for me? Why did you take care of that for me? Why did you do that? The answer is very simple. It's because Jesus has done more than that for me. There is nothing that you could be asked to do that Jesus hasn't outdone you. And we do it because of what he did for us. After 9/11, the President of the United States, President Bush, stood before the American people after that great terroristic act, killing 3,000, injuring at least 6,000. More than that, I think, at this point we know. And he stood before the American people and he said, "Let's don't let this fear of terrorism keep us from living life as usual." I think a good statement. Let's don't let something keep us back from being who we are. But an 80-year-old woman got on TV after that, after she heard that, and she said, "I don't want to live life as usual. I lived during the Second World War. We rationed food. We gave up gasoline because there was not enough to go around. We had blackouts. We had brownouts." And she talked about different things that they had to sacrifice for the sake of the American people during that war. And she said, "I am not here to live life as usual." And the exact statement she said, I think I can remember it, is, "I want to hear what I can do to sacrifice to win this war against terrorism. Don't tell me to live life as usual. It is not usual anymore." Well, I hope that's the kind of a sentiment we have about our Christian service. I hope that we go forth in this day basically saying, "I'm not living life as usual. I'm not acting like there's nothing going on, that there's no war in the world, that there's no ungodly thing happening in our country. I want to know what can I do to win this war against evil. How can I sacrifice so God wins this war against..." He's going to win the war against evil, but how can we help America to win this war against evil? How can we help other nations win this war against evil? Jesus says, "I've given you an example, and you should do as I've done to you." And then at the end of this passage, he even states it a little bit more profoundly. "I give you a new command, love one another. You must love one another just as I love you. If you love one another, everyone will know you are my disciples. That's the challenge that we have today. If I could be of any help to you, elders and I will be in the back. Be glad to pray with you. If you've never given your life to Jesus and you don't have a whole clean self, we hope today is the day you choose. I want to be clean. I want Jesus to wash me and make me clean. Sometimes we pray with each other because we have dirty feet. We'll be in the back. You won't be too embarrassed to come back to share something like that because the person you'll talk to has dirty feet too. So if we can help you, please come.